Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. I'm Gannett's State Capitol correspondent, John Kennedy, and filling in for my usual partner, Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor, Zach Anderson, is my real-life partner, Mary Ellen Kloss, State Capitol Bureau Chief for the Miami Herald. Welcome, Mary Ellen.
Hello.
Zach is away this week on furlough from his paper. This is something that Gannett newspapers nationwide are doing to help ease the revenue losses from the nationwide shutdown. And I'll be off furloughing next week myself, so Zach will be back in my absence. But it's great to have Mary Ellen here. You were last on the show over the Christmas holiday, wasn't it?
Yes. That was back in the time when we thought socially isolated meant somebody didn't invite you to their holiday cocktail party.
Oh, yeah. That was about all it amounted to. But what a different world we're in now. But this week, we're going to look at how Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has been faring in the fight against coronavirus, how nursing homes have become a troublesome hotspot for the virus that may say much about the need for stepping up testing and more testing. But first, that music can mean only one thing. Yep, it's time to pick a number. Mary Ellen, are you ready to unmask a number for us that's relevant in Florida politics this week?
Indeed. My number is 560.
Okay, 560. That's a 560 for Mary Ellen, and I'm here with a 6.5. Fairly simple, but okay, it does have a fraction. Still, we'll come back later in the show to explain what those numbers mean. But let's get back for a moment to Governor Ron DeSantis. He's been holding daily news briefings on coronavirus, rattling off numbers from the vast amounts of equipment he and the state's emergency management division are distributing to hospitals and healthcare workers. And he's talking about how the state's testing ratio, that's the number of people tested compared to the overall population, how that's coming close to rivaling that of South Korea, a nation that was seen as a relative success story in fighting the virus. But DeSantis is widely seen as having been late in ordering the statewide stay-at-home orders, not doing that until April 1st, effective April 3rd, which was well past spring break. It left a lot of counties open for business for a long time, and that may have allowed the virus to make its way around the state. And this week, he had to do some explaining about why he is letting WWE, that's a worldwide wrestling entertainment, still broadcast events, now audience-free, admittedly, from their Orlando training center. But DeSantis called that an essential Florida business. He's also talking about getting NASCAR going again and some kind of golf event featuring Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. His comments this week came just minutes before the president also bemoaned the lack of live sports and talked about reopening at least parts of the nation by May 1st, maybe even earlier. Mary Ellen, are we going to be out of the woods on this coronavirus when the stay-at-home order expires at the beginning of May?
You know, I really get the sense that this is kind of like we're playing the good news, bad news game. And the good news is that they're not telling us the bad news. I mean, basically, politicians didn't get into office by being straight with us. And so I really don't think that they're going to be doing that now. By the end of the week, I think we're going to start hearing things like they're going to extend some of the deadlines on social distancing instead of to the end of April. We'll now hear it to the end of May. And in May, maybe the president and governor will start talking about extending some of the deadlines until July. They give us this information in small bits because they think that's all we can handle. And sadly, I think they don't see any upside to being frank. They don't see any political upside to being frank. And that's unfortunately kind of where we are.
You know, the governor held a briefing this week where he mentioned the White House four times in the first 90 seconds. And of course, they were favorable recommendations. Do you think that Florida's governor is going to want to meet the president's May 1st goal?
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely wants to make sure that Florida hotels, including all Trump properties, start opening up to tourists again. But there is really an enormous danger in prematurely opening in the absence of something that I think is very important, and that is universal testing. You know, as a tourist economy, Florida really is kind of the canary in the coal mine in many ways. people may be willing to leave their homes once these restrictions start to soften, but will they be willing to risk traveling to Florida? And if we don't have a grip on containing the virus here, will they want to come? And I just think that Florida needs to show that it's contained it and it's got this in, under control. And to get there, the best medicine is tough medicine, but I seriously don't think that this governor is willing to take it.
And what does the situation going on now at nursing homes, as tragic as it is, what does that say about what's going on in Florida with the virus?
Nursing homes, I think, are a really good example of how the governor has mishandled the messaging of this crisis. For a month, he focused on diminishing the spread of the virus outside of the epicenter, which was South Florida and Miami particularly. He downplayed the evidence that people who were symptomatic were carrying and shedding COVID, and he restricted testing to only people who displayed symptoms. This week, the governor did something really remarkable, I think, and he changed course dramatically. He admitted that elder care facilities that house the state's most vulnerable residents had become homes to dozens of clusters of positive cases. And what's really significant is they weren't just in South Florida. In fact, three homes with dozens of cases were in sparsely populated cities in North Florida. So the claim that this virus was only a big problem in South Florida was shattered. And then there was a second admission, and that is that asymptomatic staff in these nursing homes were the likely carriers of the virus into these vulnerable population. So to his credit, the governor acted on that, and he deployed 40 members of the National Guard to start aggressively testing residents of the 700 nursing homes and the 3,000 assisted living facilities. But it is a very direct change of direction, and I'm kind of wondering, what do you think, John, about this? What do you make of this aggressive testing at nursing homes?
Well, it seems like it's either a recognition that the state is aware that it could see hundreds of nursing home residents die because of this virus, or the governor is confident that the industry can contain it, and it's a public relations push to somewhat take credit for being on top of it. Mm-hmm. The governor has been a little bit all over the map in dealing with the virus spread. You know, Zach Anderson and I talked on the show at the end of March about how DeSantis's communications director, Helen Foray, tweeted at that time that 21 counties did not have a single case of COVID-19 and that 40 counties had 10 or fewer cases, and that, you know, more than half of the problems were in South Florida. Her conclusion, given this data, it makes little sense to shut down the entire state. Well, exactly 1 week after she tweeted that, DeSantis did issue his stay-at-home order. But the cases now in every Florida county, are climbing at more or less about 1,000 per day. That suggests that not closing the whole state may have prolonged our dealing with it and spread it further and further into some of these rural areas.
You know, it does sound grim, but I guess it's not all bad news. I mean, this week we did hear that the state's hospital capacity and ICU bed space looks like it's keeping up with the demand. And that was really a big worry just a few weeks ago when the state was, you know, scrambling to build field hospitals, alternative hospitals, that kind of thing. And the state's Surgeon General Scott Ruvke said this week that the state seems to be at a plateau with hospitalizations and cases. Now, one thing that I think is really important for your listeners to keep in mind, and the Miami Herald's reported this out, is anytime you hear estimate of what our cases are and hospitalizations are, those numbers are likely a significant undercount, and because they don't include thousands of results from the private testing labs that are delayed by as much as 2 weeks. So it takes about 2 weeks and this huge delay for any of those numbers to get counted by the state. So when you hear that things are plateauing, you've got to put that into the proper context. And that is, that was probably accurate, a while back, and we don't have all the information. So one of the other things that happened this week is some new dynamics and new development on the unemployment system. What's going on with that, John? You've been covering that.
Yeah, well, unemployment is through the roof right now. And Sunday, Disney World is set to furlough 43,000 employees, and Universal and SeaWorld also plan in coming weeks to furlough another 33,000 workers. It's just been a nightmare for folks trying to get onto the state's unemployment website. It's been glitch-ridden, overwhelmed. The governor has talked about direct enrolling some of these theme park workers into the unemployment system. That would be something new and different. Somehow, you know, the employer would be able to directly enroll these people in unemployment, I guess, seems to be the concept. This week, he put another agency head in charge of the failed online system that's called Connect. Basically, he's appointing his Department of Management Services chief as unemployment czar, and that person is expected to be able to keep DeSantis posted on the amount of claims that are coming in and their status. That's been something that he's been frustrated with right now, the way that the system is so unresponsive, and apparently even the agency people are pretty unresponsive to the governor. But you know, this is sounding like a recurring theme, but DeSantis was about 3 weeks late in acknowledging the problems at the Connect site. The state is spending as much as $109 million now on three additional call centers that they've added. That's on top of the $77 million that the state spent on setting up the Connect system back in the days of Governor Rick Scott, who, you know, very famously now as a U.S. senator, we remember recently spoke against the federal government giving unemployed Americans $600 a week payments under the federal relief package. He thought, yes, such payments would be what he called a disincentive for people going back to work. But, you know, so that seemed to be sort of a Simon Legree kind of a moment there for Senator Scott in, approaching a crisis for most Floridians and most Americans. Mary Ellen, do you think DeSantis is feeling the political blowback? Is he potentially cooked as governor? What are polls showing about his popularity now?
Well, you know, he started out very favorably rated before this crisis. Really high favorability ratings. But if you look across the nation, most governors have seen their popularity numbers rise with their handling of the coronavirus in their states. Democrats and Republicans who had started with lower ratings have actually seen their favorability increase. The polling for a morning consult has, for example, California Governor Gavin Newsom's up by more than 40%. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has more favorable ratings by 30-plus point increase than he did before this crisis. And Republican Mike DeWine in Ohio has had his favorability rating increased by 30 percentage points in polls. Now, when we look at Governor DeSantis, he started with really high ratings. They were about 58% before the coronavirus, and that's down by 7%. So his ratings actually have gone down. This morning consult poll still has him at a generally popular 51%. And a poll by the University of North Florida reported a similar number, 51%. But it's clear that instead of going up, it's going down for this governor.
Do you think, is his future basically tied to what happens in the next few weeks and months with the virus? The economy, the president, more and more Floridians losing jobs, whether Tom Brady is good at quarterback of the Tampa Bay Bucks, if there's football in Florida in the fall. I mean, is DeSantis going to succeed or get blamed based on how all of this turns out?
You know, it's really interesting. I do think that people have a huge stake in this, and this governor has an enormous profile because of it. The coronavirus has affected every household, and no one is on the sidelines. Everybody's going to have an opinion about who was in command and when we got here and when we're going to get out. And I just think that in many ways, the way DeSantis is handling this, and I think the way he's kind of attached himself to the president's coattails, you know, it's definitely going to have an effect on how people view him, for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting, Mary Ellen. But there are some signs already, though, that the state is looking to take some baby steps toward reopening the economy. The governor has talked about a task force of some kind, a kind of wide-ranging group that is going to start advising him back and forth. He says it's going to look at everything under the sun. What are you hearing about where this multi-phased blue ribbon panel can lead us?
Yeah. So the governor's office is going to name this task force, and it's probably going to happen even very soon. The bottom line is that they're going to really focus on reopening the state in, quote, phases, which is something we're hearing that the Trump administration is also looking at, and that this group will be focused on small businesses and include people from K-12 education and higher ed, travel, international and cruises, recreation and large event planning like conventions. And they're going to be looking at things like business protocols for a safe workplace environment. And supposedly, they're going to be developing metrics to help determine how quickly the economy can reopen. What will the conditions look like to ease the restrictions on social distancing? But here is, to me, what is the crucial question. And if this group does not put as its center point a focus on testing, and what kind of threshold will there be for the kind of saturation testing that we need in every community, then how will we know that the daycare center that you're sending your kid to is safe? And how do we know that the business that you're, you know, the dry cleaner is safe? You know, it seems to me that they need to be addressing testing as a central point here. And this, we have not heard any talk of a standard and protocol from this administration about how they're dealing with that right now.
There's been a lot of promises or hope, I guess, for the Abbott laboratory instant testing. That seems to be something that is being deployed at a modest level, I guess, for healthcare workers and first responders. There seems to be some vision that this kind of accelerated testing could be made available possibly out into the general public, right? Into the workplace. That's the kind of thing that you're talking about that would be needed to be able to assure you that as you bring your child to daycare, that all is safe there. Or if you're, the governor has kind of been back and forth a little bit on whether or not to open schools again. He kind of freelanced some thoughts about that about a week or so ago, that just in recent days he has sort of pushed back a little bit against. But it sounds like this task force would be looking at would you anticipate that it would be something that would not be necessarily a regional reopening of parts of the state as much as sectors of the economy?
Right. Yeah. I think that those are a bunch of unanswered questions. The governor has talked highly about these Abbott Labs instant testing, but we have no idea how much they think it's reasonable to conclude that we're going to see that across the state. He said it's going to be a game changer if we get that, but what's the realistic time frame for that? I would hope that this group can get the administration to be far more transparent and open about what they know and what they project than the public has been. I'm not holding my breath on any of that. One of the really significant things is this delay in the testing results. And right now we know that Florida probably has a significant undercount. And, you know, if we move the state open, we've got to be sure that the information we have is accurate and timely.
Yeah. Well, it does seem like everything right now is, we're taking it day to day. And I think for DeSantis and his future, it's one of those kind of things too. Wait, I hear some music coming on. It's time for us to get back to those numbers we talked about earlier. Mary Ellen, you came in with a 560. What was that all about?
Well, that is the number of servers, housekeepers, and cooks that were temporarily laid off or furloughed at the Trump National Resort in Doral as a result of the coronavirus crisis. Now, the Gulf Resort and Hotel closed on March 23rd when Miami-Dade ordered all hotels and motels to closed to contain the spread of the virus. And that is the number of people who are now out of work.
560 Trump employees.
Right.
Wow. Well, I had a 6.5, as in 6.5 hours, which was the average wait time Floridians calling the state's Department of Economic Opportunity had to wait to get assistance when trying to use that online Connect site to file an application for unemployment. Now, only 2% of those calls were answered. These numbers were according to contract language with the three call centers that we mentioned earlier that the state has hired to help remedy the website problems. So I guess that, you know, 6.5 hour wait didn't even necessarily mean you actually spoke with someone at the end, but you were hanging on the phone for that long. So it's been a pretty horrible situation with the state's unemployment system, and maybe there'll be some remedy somewhere along the way. But that's about all the time that we have for this week's edition of Inside Florida Politics. And I'd like to thank Mary Ellen Kloss of the Miami Herald for graciously joining us this week and sharing her insights.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank our fantastic audio production team of Joe Farzano and Thomas Cordy at the Palm Beach Post for helping put this show together. And thanks to you all for listening. And stay safe, everybody.